It's Paul Hamilton.
That's what they called me in college, was the bone.
He has the facts to back up his opinions.
People ask me, well, how are the Sabres going to, are they going to win tonight? I don't have a clue.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
I wanted to talk to Paul Hamilton about the Sabres today because I miss them both. And I'll just reiterate that when it comes to the Sabres, not Paul, of course, but when it comes to the Sabres, not in a while have I gotten to, what, August 19th and felt like I missed them. Sometimes it's actually felt like a relief that we didn't have, because it was usually bad news, you know, guys were leaving and what wasn't being done. However, this summer is coming toward a close and it might be worth it to talk about also what hasn't been done. Paul Hamilton on the Wester Hotline. Paul, you up for that conversation?
Yeah. Did you know I was watching Caitlin Clark last night in Toronto?
I did not.
I didn't know if you knew that.
I did not. So yeah. That the WNBA is in Toronto now.
Yeah, they normally play where the Marlies play, which is like 7,000 or 8,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
But
perfect.
When Caitlin Clark shows up, you play where the Leafs play.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. And it was sold out. I figured it was sold out about 5 days ago. I just went on Ticketmaster to see if I could get a ticket. There were five empty seats in different sections, which actually surprised me. So I sat three rows from the top of the place. It was like $100 Canadian. It wasn't bad. I didn't think it was a bad price. Enjoyed it.
That's kind of cool when you can do that, if you have enough facilities where you can do that. Because it feels to me like 7,000 or 8,000 might be the perfect amount. But then if you have this kind of draw, you need bigger than you have it.
That happens a lot with the Indiana Fever. They wind up in Dallas, it happens.
Okay.
You know, they show up and all of a sudden they're in the big arena instead of whatever arena that, you know, the WNBA team is playing in. So
sure.
And a lot of the players, it's kind of funny to listen to them. They're fighting it. And you don't have to like Caitlin Clark or whatever, but you got to admit, they weren't playing in those arenas before Caitlin Clark showed up, whether you like her, you don't, or whatever.
She's a superstar.
And people, like, that's why I was there, to go see her play. I've wanted to see her play, and I got the opportunity, and she had a good game. I do watch most of her games on TV just because I do enjoy watching her play. And, I mean, she's doing things assist-wise that have never been done in this league by a lot. And she's still, I believe, around the third or fourth leading scorer in the league. And her team's in first place. You don't have to like her as a fan, but you have to respect what she's doing for the league.
Sure. Apologies if this is not a perfectly fair comparison, but what I'm thinking of with this point you're making about how the Toronto team was able to move to the, basically, what, 2.5 times the size of the arena or whatever it actually is,
right.
Reminds me of my days with the Buffalo Blizzard.
Uh-huh.
And the Blizzard played in the arena in Buffalo, indoor soccer, and almost would never open up the 300s. So you had, you know, several thousand people, but it still came off as, in my mind, it came off as like, well, you know, the atmosphere isn't quite what you'd want because the building is maybe half full, like the top, the big, all the 300s are empty. Then, but there were a couple of teams in the league. Cleveland was one that played in smaller buildings. Cleveland played at the Cleveland State Convocation Center, which might have been 7,000 or 8,000. It was perfect. And you would get an atmosphere that you just could not get in the big league arenas that were not even half full. So it would have been great for the league and for the fan experience, I think, if you went to smaller buildings. Not every city had the perfect fit. Cleveland did. If you went to smaller buildings and had like a packed house, and maybe the Toronto team has that when they're in the Marlies Arena, and then, you know, last night's an exception. But just a better fan experience when you're in a place that's not too big for the event.
It sounds like it's close to that because there was a Tempo season ticket holder in the GO Train sitting across from me who, you know, was just staunch on what Caitlin Clark is overrated and all that. But we did get into the Tempo. And she said it is so much fun having them in that smaller 7,000, 8,000 seater. And she goes, tonight was fun, yeah. But she said it really is nice to have them in that smaller setting where the Marlies play. By the way, they won the Calder Cup this year. and I've been in there for playoff games with the Marlies, and it is kind of a fun setup that they have.
Rochester's like that.
Sure, because, you know, it was I was in there for a couple of playoff games, and so it was well attended. And matter of fact, now that I think about it, the Sabres may have had a preseason game there not a while back. So it doesn't matter. I've been in there for games. And she's right. It is fun to watch. And she said it's fun to watch the tempo in there. This is their first season, as you mentioned a little bit earlier, as they're an expansion team. And it doesn't sound like, from what at least she was saying, and she's a season ticket holder, that they could support, like, being in I don't even know the name of the place, wherever the Leafs play.
Mm-hmm. Scotiabank now?
Thank you. It's been, like, 9 different things. You know, they really probably couldn't support that right now. I mean, having them in Coca-Cola Center, I think it's called, used to be the Ricoh Center, is more of an attraction and more fun, she said.
Yeah, and just to finish the point, if it hasn't already been made, but, like, you and I have both been around the American League, and some of those smaller towns with smaller buildings are great times.
Yes.
I mean, I'm thinking about Portland in the past, or, you know, Binghamton, Syracuse,
Hershey.
Glens Falls, Hershey, Providence, you know, like, even though the building is not necessarily even 10,000 seats.
Rochester.
But, yeah, Rochester.
Now, that's a little bit bigger than some of the buildings you're mentioning, but when the Amherst went to the Eastern Conference Finals a couple of years ago, that place was rocking.
Yeah, that's really fun.
I mean, and now their capacity is somewhat over 10,000. Not a lot, but a little bit, and they were pretty much filling it up for that by the time they got into the Eastern Conference Finals.
Well, Paul, I just wanted to have a little bit of a temperature check moment on the Sabres, as we're now within a month of training camp and preseason games even. I mean, it always is like this, where it doesn't cool off first outside. It just sort of hits you that hockey is here. And when we spoke about them a month and a half ago, I mean, after free agency started, July 1st, okay, well, you never know exactly when to draw the curtain. And, like, all right, that's it. And here we are now to August 19th, and there has not been any movement. There isn't Connor Hellebuck. There isn't some other Alex Tuck replacement, right? Not that we're necessarily expecting that. But where is your mind at on sort of how likely it is that their current roster is going to be their roster?
Probably. And, I mean, prices need to come down. And that doesn't mean that they won't. But they need to come down. And you know, Jarmo Kekalainen is not going to pay the prices that are out there right now. A name that has been out there a little bit. And then it seemed like Columbus might have been willing to trade Marchenko, who is 26 years old. Now, he would be a guy that, not this year, but you would have to sign to a contract fairly soon. But this is also a guy, his last couple of years, 27 goals last year, 31 goals the year before, 67 points and 74 points. And then I say to myself, and I always say this, why would Columbus want to get rid of him? And, well, if you can get the right trade, you can maybe restock your team a little faster. If you can get a couple of really, really good prospects out of a team or you know, for a talent like that. And he was a hotter commodity, it seemed like, before the draft than maybe he is now. I don't hear too much about him right now. His teammate, Werenski, was the same way. You know, it was like, and then all of a sudden he comes out and says, well, I don't want to be traded. You know, I want to play in Columbus.
Right.
But what does that mean? How many times have we heard that from players? And, you know, it didn't. So just throw that name out there a little bit, that was a name that was being kicked around as somebody available in the NHL. He's 6'3". He's not Alex Tuck by any means. His goals and point totals aren't too far away. I don't think he does some of the other things that Alex Tuck does, but I certainly think he would be a good addition to the Sabres, depending on what they would have to give up for him. And then knowing that, all right, you're going to have to probably sign him to a contract soon, too, so you better be sure you can do that.
Well, I just want to ask again, at what point, if there is one, where you don't ever slam the door, I guess, on
no,
these kind of moves.
You don't.
But at what point, like, how does the calculus work for the Sabres or an NHL team where you're like, all right, well, Hellebuck or some other player we would have done it for a certain price. We kind of wanted to at a certain price. But do you not get to a point where you're about to get to camp and then it becomes more disruptive, or feel like maybe you want to get into a season and see if you have a bigger problem than you wanted to have, and then maybe something happens. But it kind of feels to me, my instinct is that a trade between maybe like next week and October 1st, the opener, is just kind of weird.
Yeah, and let's say the problem with the Hellebuyck trade was the Sabres were willing to give up the fourth overall pick, but they wanted the eighth back, and Winnipeg wouldn't do it. And Buffalo said, okay, then we're not giving you all that stuff if we're not getting, you know, if we're not flipping spots in the first round. You could still do that. You could look, okay, because Bjork is the guy that Winnipeg took. A lot of folks thought Buffalo might take him at four because he was like one of those wild cards at forward from Sweden that a lot of scouts liked. So, you know, and then they wind up taking Rudolph. All right, now both teams know who they have. Let's say Winnipeg approaches you again. And now you know, well, okay, they're willing to do it. So now we get Bjork, as pretty much our first-round pick this year. They get Rudolph for their first-round pick this year. Is that something, now that they know what the names are that are connected to it, would Buffalo be more, or I'm sorry, would Winnipeg be more open to it? Who knows? So, you know, but you have to kind of reconstruct the trade, because the trade was, well, Winnipeg's going to get 4 and 8. Well, okay, now there are names put to that. All right, we're not giving you 4 and 8, but now that you know the names, do you want to do it in Buffalo's case, you could say, do you want to do it the right way?
Well, apart from any specifics, though, I still want to try to get this across. Like, whenever camp opens, like 3 weeks away, thereabouts, yeah. I mean, do you think that's a deadline for teams that, all right, well, now Luukkonen, say, or any, whether it's Rudolph or someone else, like, now we're at a point where guys report, and we don't want them, I feel like this is right, but I'm asking you, like, we don't want them looking over their shoulder about trades anymore, right, for a while. Like, you show up for this season, you're on this team.
We could almost be there now. I don't think there is a deadline, so to speak. But there's a point, and I think we've hit it, where it is likely a big thing isn't going to happen. You always know it could. But, you know, it gets to a point where it's likely that it won't.
Right.
Now, what else is different? Luukkonen is another one that's different. Is Winnipeg on his no trade, which kicked in on July 1st? You could have traded him before the draft or at the draft. He didn't have a no trade then. It's only a few teams, but is Winnipeg one of those few teams? And then if it is, well, that shoots the trade right there.
Right.
You can't even talk about it basically because, you know, that's who they would want, and he would have to waive it to go to Winnipeg. So that possibly could have finished it right there if Winnipeg is on that list.
So you're kind of saying here, like, we might be at that point already where we're sort of like the poker game is over. And,
right.
And Winnipeg is interesting, though, Paul, because they might have pressure to do the thing that the Sabres don't. That's always been true here.
They did go get a goalie. It's not like all of a sudden if Hellebuck's gone, they don't have a goalie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if they were to get Luukkonen, then Luukkonen and Skinner are their goalies.
Yeah.
They could be worse than that. I mean, you could say, well, why did they go get a goaltender then? Especially Skinner, because he likes to play a lot. Hellebuyck likes to play most of the games. How's Skinner going to react sitting around playing 15 games or between 15 and 20 games?
Are you with the Bisons at all this week?
I am, actually. That's where I'm talking to you about.
You're there now.
Game finished up just as we were speaking. The Bisons had a great opportunity. They loaded the bases on walks and then struck out 3 times in a row in the 8th inning, down 1 run.
Oh, wow.
Couldn't get a sacrifice fly or a bounce out or anything. So it's rare you see that, where a pitcher loads the bases with walks and the relief pitcher comes in and strikes out the side and you can't get that tying run across the plate. So they did lose by a score of 2-1.
That's not great. We had a 22-0 game last night in the majors.
I didn't see that.
Milwaukee beat Seattle 22-0. The first shutout that large in Major League Baseball since 1900.
Did any position players pitch?
I would hope. I don't know. I just saw Julio Rodriguez not know how many outs there were and throw a fly ball that he caught over the wall.
I didn't realize, I believe it was Pat Malacaro told me, and I don't remember the number, you have to be up by or down by a certain amount of runs now to put a position player in. Is it 10 maybe?
I don't know, but he's right. You can't just do it anytime you want.
It's a newer rule. It's a rule that, you just can't do it. I want to say it's 10, but don't quote me on that.
No, it was
a while ago that Pat told me that.
It's a Dave Roberts and the Dodgers rule because they got in games. You know, this isn't something we love about how sports has evolved, but it sort of aligns with data stuff where the Dodgers have these big division leads and they'll get down, not that many runs and just basically throw the game because they don't really need it that badly. They'd rather save their bullpen than win the game.
Right.
And so that's when baseball might not have just been the Dodgers, but that's when baseball put the rule in, like, all right, you can't do that anytime you want. Like in extra innings, in tie games, the Dodgers were using position players to pitch because, like, all right, well, I just don't want to blow out my bullpen. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, we don't want that. That's when they put in the runner on second as well in extra innings, too.
Yeah, I call it the ghost runner.
I never know what to call it because there
that's
is somebody
what I call
standing
it is the
there.
Ghost runner. When I call a game and I go, our ghost runner is at second base, so that's just my term for it.
It might be the most popular term for it, but I can't do it because there's a guy there. Unlike when we're playing as kids and the ghost runner is not, there's nobody there. It's just
there's nobody there, yeah.
So I don't know. It's never really zombie runner. Like I've never really found the right phrase for my taste.
So to answer your question, today was my scouting day, and on Saturday I will be doing the game, and Pat and Duke will be on TV.
Very good. Paul, thanks for your time.
Yeah, take care.
Paul Hamilton on the West Shore Hotline. His appearances on WGR brought to you by Raylax Honda. Raylax, we got this. Next hour, Mike Tenier, longtime football scribe, and Daryl Ryder on the Browns. The Bills headed to Cleveland today for a joint practice tomorrow and a preseason game on Saturday. Sal Capaccio still to come. This is Mike Shope on WGR.
I mean, this weather would say I'm not, but the anticipation for the Sabres season is so different than what we've had in so long. Even last year, obviously with that season being so unexpected and so enjoyable in so many ways, like there was very, very little coming in. And it started so terribly. Like it felt like just rinse, repeat again with how it was going. I mean, we obviously got all the way to that December 9th date that we all referred to on the calendar where we thought, well, it's over. They're sitting in last. It's early December. Like we've seen this song before. And when's the last time we came in thinking they were going to be good? I mean, it had to have been maybe during Eichel's time for a little bit there, maybe a season or two when we thought we had high expectations, but it's been quite a while. In terms of the roster, we know it's not much different other than maybe the subtraction of Alex Tuch and the fact that they stayed Pat in goal, which I'm kind of curious to see how that plays out. I mean, I guess you could say playing the odds that between Lyon and Lukanen, one of them still can play good. So I guess that's the odds they're going with. But to me, going into the year, the fact that it'll feel like, hey, we have games that not only matter, but people are excited to watch right away to start on October 1st. Like, that's definitely the difference from years past.
Right. I made that point this week, too, that last year got so good, but not only was it not that right now, like last August, anticipation for it, but not even well until the season was it the case that people started to get really into it. I think it was probably halfway through the year, and they had that winning streak January and then forward from there to the point where, I mean, who would have thought you would have those outdoor canal side party scenes last year at this time? You know, just that seemed almost impossible to believe, but it happened. So soon enough. Brian, thank you. Off to the ballpark, did I hear?
Yep, going to the Bisons tonight. I just was thinking the calendar is running out, and I haven't been to as many as I would like to have, so this seems like an absolutely gorgeous day, so I'm like, that's the plan. Family's going to the Bisons tonight.
Very good. Have fun. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Mike.
Brian Koziol, tee to green tomorrow morning on WGR. Then we're doing the cool thing during the game with our guys on the stream talking about it as it plays out on the YouTube stream, not on the radio, but you can follow along with Bills Browns that way, which I think is an idea long overdue. And I know there are surely podcasts and different enterprises everywhere that do things like that, you know, watch the game with me. I wanted something like that 20 years ago here. Not that we had YouTube, but I just always wanted to be on the air during the game when we didn't have the games, but like you couldn't do it. It's not, they don't let you. there was no chance of that. But I always thought that would be a fun listen, you know, like you don't necessarily want the announcers. You want your friends. I think maybe I remember David Wells talking about this once, like just, I don't know what the context was, the former pitcher, that the same kind of thing. And now you have the Mannings who do it. And I have found that I got less into it after it arrived. I mean, just sort of gradually. I love the idea. I just didn't always want the conversation to be so far away from the game. And, you know, people complain about us in this way sometimes, you know, like when we're way off whatever like the big sports topic should be, you know, and that's probably fair enough. But that's a cool way to watch the game, I think. And, you know, people that you like and trust talking about it as it plays out. I think it's great that we're doing that tomorrow. So check that out if you want. 803-0550 is the number. Got a little bit more baseball I want to get to. Some football, of course, as well. Bulldog back on Monday. This is Mike Shope on WGR.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casino. Nothing else comes close.
Welcome in. Sabres Live here at KeyBank Center, home of these beautiful French Connection statues in Ticketmaster Alumni Plazas, which is great,
by the way. That's a scenic you could show every day and no one will get tired of seeing
it. Oh, I know. Seeing the French Connection.
Like the top of the roof of the building, it's nice. People did great work on it.
The downtown area is nice, but
seeing Razor on the roof was good last year to open the season.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. He did that. He was way up there.
Remember, we were just in a meeting or something, and we kind of threw it out there. Let's put Rob on the roof.
Yeah.
on the roof. Where could we put him this year?
Well, that would be a great...
That's a good one for the
fans.
That's
six suggestions from the fans. Last year, Rob Ray opened the season on the roof. Let's see, where do they want him this year?
We're
right?
On opening our opening broadcast for Rob's first appearance
October
on camera.
October 3rd against Chicago, home opener. Where do we want Rob?
Where should Razor be in relation to being at the game? He still has to get to his
spot.
Well,
they can pre-record it and run it in the
pregame.
Well,
actually, they probably did that. He wasn't live on the roof, right?
No, they had the drone and everything.
We can let that wrestling cat out of the bag.
Anyway, Sabres Live here on WGR 550 and MSG. Dan Levy's back, everybody. I'm Marty Baron. How you feeling? You took the day off yesterday. You had a, you know, obviously take care of your
things. Yeah, no, colonoscopy day yesterday.
Important to share. I did it last year. You had to do it this year. It's fantastic.
I'm 10 pounds lighter. I'm not even making that up.
Well, everything went well. You texted even before the show. You know, I'm back home. Everything's good. So
yeah, Brenda says the doctor texted her 15 minutes after I went in and when they said we're putting you to sleep for a short nap they call it, which is good because you don't, for those that haven't had it, you don't feel a thing. The prep is the part you get through, but at the end of the day, it's really nothing. It's nothing you haven't done before. You just do it a lot.
Well, I mean, I just turned 49, so I was 48 last year when I did it, close to 50 after. Yeah. They recommend over 45 now, actually, to get it done, right? Your first one. And then they decide, are you going to be an every 5-year type of guy, and every 4-year type of person, whatever,
family history. Yeah, family history plays a big part.
Absolutely.
So my dad had colorectal cancer. Because he didn't report anything that he had been seeing when he would go to the bathroom, what he should have reported was the blood that he saw. He didn't, and it was too late. So by the time he saw the doctor and they found what they found, his colon was done. So he wore a colostomy bag probably for the last...
Really?
Yeah, it wasn't fun either. You know, and, you know, mom's got to help him unplug and empty the bag and all this stuff, which isn't pretty to look at, but you're functional. You live.
My funny enough,
a lot of people,
a bad choice word, but my grandfather had a bladder bag from the time I remember, like, being around or whatever, so that he had to empty once in a while. But a colon bag is a different situation.
It's a different empty.
Yeah, absolutely.
a different thing. But anyway, the point being, he didn't have to have that bag. He just didn't tell the doctor there's something that was different. And obviously, there are a lot of things now, and we won't stay on this too long, but I think it's important because... You know, the point where Brenda's telling me, I got a text from your doctor 15 minutes after you went in that room, and I said, we'll see you in a couple hours or whatever. 15 minutes later, he says, he's clear, all good, no polyps, nothing. So that's obviously the good news. And the prep, as they say, it's nothing you haven't done. You just spend more time on the toilet and things move quickly. And then you see the doctor the next day and hopefully get good news. And in Brenda's case, obviously, they found a tumor. Because she didn't want to have a colonoscopy ever. And I convinced her to get one because she was getting to that the age number you're speaking of. I won't say what age at the time. And they did find a tumor, which turned out to be a rare cancer, as we've talked about many times, which she obviously is winning that battle, continues to win it. But if she didn't have the colonoscopy...
Well, the Sabres do a great job.
She wouldn't be here. So.
With prostate cancer, we do the prostate checks like they do that, that big clinic. And some people have got there and says, that saved my life. I've got to do your checks all the time. That's important. That's what Dan did yesterday. He's back on today. This is the last show of the week, by the way, here for Sabres Live. We got tomorrow and Friday off. We'll be back on Monday. And one of the reasons why I think we got tomorrow and Friday off, well, we've been getting Fridays throughout the summer. We'll start Friday shows. It'll be Monday through Friday after Labor Day. Training camp will be going right after that, the season, so we'll be 5 days a week. And I'm wearing my Blue Jays hat right now because, Dan, we're going to the Bison's game this afternoon. It's a 1 o'clock game, so as soon as the show's over, we're going over. The Bison's, obviously, they're affiliated with the Blue Jays. The Blue Jays are only half a game out here. They won. They beat the Rays yesterday.
Let's go, Blue Jays.
So I got my Jays hat on to support the Jays, and you know, maybe I'll get myself a Bison's hat when I go this afternoon. So that'll be good.
I forgot. I wore my Blue Jays shirt, I think, yesterday around the house, completely forgetting we're going to the game after today. So I'm glad we're going, though. So
I moved a couple appointments around this morning, but it's getting to be better outside right now, so that's good.
I play in the rain. That's fine.
No, you don't play baseball in the rain. I hated playing baseball in the rain.
I loved playing Rob's favorite sport.
In the rain.
Soccer in the rain was the best because you could slide. If you missed a step and you think you could slide tackle and get that ball without causing any harm.
I love getting dirty in the grass and the mud on the pitch or whatever in soccer. Baseball is a different thing. Can't catch the ball, can't swing the bat. It's slippery and everywhere.
You know what was on TV this morning? I was flipping around on one of those channels that's not necessarily a cable thing where you can watch all these shows that maybe you've never heard of or stations you've never heard of. Cricket was on, and they were in a lunch break, so the players were having lunch at 12 noon.
There was some rain, but
it was England against Pakistan, which is a very good matchup in cricket.
Very, very good.
And
countries.
I remember working up at the Fan in Toronto, and there were moments when the World Cup of Cricket would be on, and we'd have to give scoring updates and be able to talk about it. And I'm thinking, I have no clue. Because I've never really paid attention to it. But when you were forced to, you're starting to understand, you know, the wickets and the at-bats or they're not outs or the innings or the turns. What I forget right now what they call them. But it was a quick reminder to me that it's actually a really interesting sport, but you do have to invest in watching it and listening and learning the terminology and technology about it.
Well, I'll say this.
And there are some big stars in the game, too, that was the topic of conversation for the panel. So I was trying to get into it a little bit more. So I think I'm going to step back into cricket and figure it out.
So the test matches are long. They take 5 days and whatnot, and they do all day and they have breaks.
Imagine a five-day
Willow,
hockey game.
Willow is a channel on Spectrum. I know it's the last channel before like you go back to like Channel 2. They show cricket all the time, and there's the I think it's the IPL, but that's the league that they play in India, and you have the Super Kings and you know all of that, and it's basically T20, right? So it's you have you know, it's shorter matches and it's so intense, and it's all about creating runs and high number. It's awesome. So get into that. That's a fun watch.
Is that
watch.
Like seven-player rugby and compared to normal rugby?
No, it's the same amount of players. It's just, what did they call it? They don't call them innings, but it's 20 of them. Yeah. So that's what it is. You get 20, and then you either finish your 20 or you get your 10 wickets and you're done. It's awesome. But that's not what we're talking about here on this show. We're talking hockey. But it's always good to talk about mini sports, baseball, cricket, whatever.
Imagine if it was a five-day hockey game. Imagine if they said, all right, it's the Sabres against Montreal, and your playoff series is actually a five-day match.
Hockey's too young to have these weird, like, hockey didn't get invented until the late 1800s. Yeah. I just read a story yesterday that baseball used to be, in the mid-1800s, baseball was first team up to 21 runs. It wasn't innings, and a lot of time it got dark, so they it was a draw because they couldn't play anymore.
For those that don't know, Marty just foreshadowed something coming up later in the show. Continue.
What is...
21 runs.
21 runs, yes.
But without giving it away.
We are going to talk something like that. But anyway, that's what it was. And then after a while, they're like, hey, we got to figure out some way to close the games. They decided on 9 innings. There's no documentation why 9 innings. In hockey, we know that it was 60 minutes, and a lot of the sports were like 2 halves. Well, in hockey, they went 3 periods because they needed to clean the ice more often. Yep. So that's the reason why we got 3 periods, 20 minutes each and all of that. Anyway, Shayna Goldman from The Athletic will be with us at the bottom of the hour. We're going to talk about the NHL like top 20 list. We talked about goaltending yesterday. The defense list and the winger list are out. So we'll talk a little bit about that. We'll talk about what team or teams that made the playoffs last year are in trouble this year, or should be like a little concerned about this year. We'll talk about that with Shayna Goldman. But EA Sport, are you a big gamer, by the way, or were you ever a big gamer?
No, absolutely not.
Were you ever as a kid?
At Zeller's up in Canada, I would play
Nintendo
Space Invaders every day, all day.
So you arcade guy.
Arcade guy.
Okay,
but
arcade.
No, I've tried that game. I get it. It looks fun. I actually get a little motion sickness if I get in. I've tried some games, and I don't know, a little dizzy after playing them. So,
okay, so anyway, EA Sports NHL 2027, with Macklin Celebrini, by the way, on the cover. They have released, their forwards and their defensemen, basically overall rankings, like what they're rated at and their ratings of players. So it's interesting to look at that.
Are they rating the game player?
The game player. So basically,
not the actual player, but what you can do with the game player.
No, they take the player in the NHL and they say, what is he? They rank them, they rate them on six different categories. Okay. Acceleration, speed, hands, passing, slap shot power, and wrist shot powers. That's basically what they do. So they'll take Connor McDavid and basically say, okay, what do we rank Connor McDavid in acceleration?
So he's the 100. Quickest accelerating. Yeah.
So he's 98 out of 100. That's basically what they say.
How is he not 100 out of 100?
Because they want to give themselves, if somebody came about that was faster, they'd say that person is 99.
Yeah, but is that going to happen?
So speed and whatnot. So Connor McDavid ranks at 99 overall.
Okay.
He's number one in the game.
Yeah.
Nathan MacKinnon ranks 97 overall. Number two, tied with Nikita Kucherov. So you've got McDavid, MacKinnon, and Kucherov at 97. Only one player at 96. That's Leon Draisaitl. As we show on MSG, the top 10 players right now ranked by the EA Sports 2027 ratings. So Draisaitl, 96. Kale McCarr, the first defenseman on the list at 95 with Zach Werenski.
So they're taking the percentile of the skill sets you mentioned.
And they're
putting it in the computer that's not our brain and coming up with these rankings.
Okay. Basically, or some way that there's a formula, right? So that it comes out with
these
rankings.
So it's taking any favoritism for anybody out of it. It's strictly stat-driven.
I would say stat-driven, but at the same time, Connor McDavid ranks at 99 overall.
Yeah.
The only place where he ranked at 99 was his passing. He's 98 acceleration, 98 speed, 98 hands, 92 slap shot power, 92 wrist shot power. But he's a 99 overall. So there's a way to like say, hey, it's still the best player, we're going to give him a 99. Right. So there is a way to put that. So Werenski, Pastrnak, Crosby, Hughes, and Celebrini are your top 10.
And I ask because I'm looking, obviously, for Rasmus, and eventually I know you're going to get there. But that's why I ask.
Well,
it's not a favorite thing. It's a number-driven.
We know that Rasmus Dahlin was a top three finalist for the Norris last year.
Yes.
Werenski won it. It was Dahlin and Makar. Quinn Hughes wasn't on the list. Evan Bouchard wasn't on the list. So if I ask you, we just showed the top 10. Where would you think the first Buffalo Sabres on that list, the top 300 skaters, EA Sports rating, where would Rasmus Dahlin rank in the NHL right now, according to his ratings?
So how deep was that list again? How many numbers? 10?
We had 10, and we had Makar, Werenski, and Quinn Hughes, three defensemen on the top 10, and Dahlin wasn't on there.
Skating ability, shooting, passing, I'll put him at 11.
So, okay. Well, 11 is Sasha Barkov, who didn't play last year at all, but it's still, you got to rank.
Well, you're ranking for the, I get what you're doing. And I'm not going to bash
Barkov is 11. Rantanen is 12. Kaprizov is 13th. Eichel is 14th. Vasilevsky's 15th. Jack Hughes is 16th.
Yeah, I know where you're
going. And then you get to Rasmus Dahlin at 17th.
Well, you put him in amongst all those names. It's still a pretty elite group of guys.
It's an elite group of guys, but I mean, there should be like physicality, you know, intangibles. Like Rasmus Dahlin, what he does, I still think 93 overall is a great number. But when you look at Dahlin, you say 17th, and that, you know.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, you're looking at all these guys who are drivers, especially the top 10. They're drivers of the bus for their team,
yes.
Right? The difference, obviously, for the Edmonton Oilers is they have two guys that are in that.
McDavid, Draisaitl.
You know, top 10 kind of thing. But we all know that. They're two of the top 10 players in the world.
Well,
for Rasmus, we've had this conversation now since I've sat in here for Brian. The numbers actually prove it. When he's not in the lineup, the difference,
the impact difference
is it's quite evident.
So in the top 300, there is 10 Buffalo Sabres, 10 skaters in the top 300. And Rasmus Dahlin is the first one that comes about. Mm-hmm. He's ranked 17th with a 93 rating for EA Sport. Tage Thompson is second at an 89 ratings, and that's for 56 in the list of 300. He was 89 ratings the year before, and he comes at 89 ratings again this year. Followed by Josh Doan, Owen Power, and Matthias Samuelsson. That's the top five on the Sabres. So three of the defensemen, Dahlin, Power, and Samuelsson, are in the top five best players rated by
ESPN. So we're not giving any points for versatility. For Tage, you can play center or wing and be impactful.
I think 89 is a little low for
Tage
Thompson.
That's what I'm getting at here a little bit. Yeah.
Like I would say give him a 90, right? Like, look, he's a gold medalist. He's the best forward on the team. He has the...
Well, he's a game-winning shot guy. I mean, that's what this game is all about. Puck on his stick, puck on McDavid's stick, puck on Dreisaitl's stick, all those top 10 guys that you mentioned. I mean, let's think about it. Barkov, who's arguably one of the best players in the world as well, there's more to his game than putting the puck in the net, right? It's puck possession. It's killing plays. It's continuing plays at the other end. So for Tage, for me, I agree with you. It might be a bit low. A big reason, he's a game ender.
He's a game ender. He's a game.
Game over.
He makes a difference in the game.
Yep.
I look at some of the forwards that are like ranked 90 or 91 above the 89 of Tage Thompson. You got Clayton Keller. You got Matt Boldy. You got Sam Reinhart, Tim Stützle, Sebastian Aho. Those are guys that I think, okay, I could put Tage Thompson against all these guys and say, I want Tage. Tage has the reach, the size, the shot. The one thing, though, is when you look at Tage Thompson, his slap shot power is ranked best out of everybody at 95. Only Evan Bouchard ranks as high as Tage Thompson as 95. And his wrist shot power also ranks best at 94. It is Makar, Pastrnak, Jacob Chychrun, Adrian Kempe, and Philip Forsberg at 94 as well. Now,
we've also seen physicality to Tage's game.
Yes.
In particular, the goal, was it Detroit?
Get out of the way. When he
get out of the way.
Yeah, that was you know what? I am going to push you out. And that's when he found
DeBrincat. Was that what he pushed away?
He pushed DeBrincat away and he found Matthias Samuelsson coming off and scoring on that goal. Now, I know that maybe Tage doesn't have the hardest shot in the NHL this year, because when you look at NHL edge numbers, Tyler Cleven had 103 miles an hour shot, Morgan Geekie 103, Ryan Pulock, Louis Crevier. Like, when we get Louis Crevier's ratings, yeah, maybe he has a 98 shot power, because he shot, his hardest shot this year was 102. Yeah. So, but right now with what we've been released, Tage is up there in shot power and slap shot and wrist shot power. So that's a top five. The other five group.
Yeah, where's the Sabres names again? Can we see those again on the
list? Dahlin, Thompson, Doan, Power, Samuelson, that's your top five. McLeod, Norris, Benson, Quinn, and Zellweger are the other five for the Sabres. Do you think that EA Sports did not rate Zach Benson in the proper way, giving him only an 84 with everything that we've seen from Zach Benson? Or do you think that's just like whatever you get from Benson, the intangibles are not measured as much when it comes to a video game
well,
like this?
Well, I will say this much. Without, obviously, I mean, we see him higher rated in our minds as based on his impact that he has when he is playing at his absolute best. Which obviously is going to be for a long time at this game, right? He's obviously at a point in his career, it's just going to get better. Without seeing the other, all this is good to see the list here, because I'd want to see the league-wide list again before I get too critical of rankings of guys from a Buffalo perspective. I will say this. I think that, you know, we're kind of disrespecting the unbelievable speed and skill set of one Beck Malenstein, who is not on that list.
He may be speed. He may be one of the most.
Acceleration and the hands when he did go to the net for his highlight reel. Yeah. Or there should be a category for highlight reel.
He would not be
goals.
In the top 300 NHL players and in the top 10 Sabres.
But I'm having a respectful, kind of lighthearted, hey, this guy.
And I love Josh Doan. I think Josh Doan's a really good player. But to see that it goes Dahlin, Thompson, and Doan, and that Benson, for example, is not up there, or Norris isn't up there. That's different. Like, Zach Benson ranks 280 on the top 300 of the NHL. Like, that's a big difference for me. So I think that when I look at Josh Doan, I think he's a great player. But sometimes, you know, like, these ratings kind of go in a different way. Maybe not the way that I would see them. I think Samuelson, Power, Dahlin, that could be in the top five because they had a huge impact for the Sabres' success last year.
Yeah, I would think the Doan ranking is probably it's certainly set on last year. I mean, it has to be. It was his It was his hello. This is really who I am. What I can be. I was already a good player with potential. Then I showed you my potential, and now obviously everyone in this city, starting with the general manager. Starting with the owner, general manager, and down to the coaching staff, and then teammates are going to expect more from him, which he's shown that he has. It'll be up to him to create that. So I think maybe, you know, the ranking, if we're putting him, if you're not complaining, but you're noticing where it is, it might be there because you're seeing all the tools are there to actually keep growing in the game.
Yeah. And I think there's a big part of what he was able to do. And
like, there was no ceiling hit last year. It was a peak.
No,
in my mind, is how good he can be.
He can go even further than that, so, and maybe his
teammates
rankings
are going to matter. We saw in the highlights there how he got the puck sometimes.
Who does he play with? That's
who does he? Yeah, who
too.
Does he play with? And a lot of times, and we're going to have Shayna coming on here in 2 seconds. For me, when we look at statistical numbers and rankings of players, I assume you're always looking at who they're playing with, where they're playing. And that's how you impact the game. Who you, like Dorofeev, who's he going to play with? Who's going to give him the puck? Who's going to get on the puck? Can't just rush the puck up the ice on your own all the time. It's too easy to defend.
No, and obviously that's just the EA Sports ratings, right? So sometimes they get it right, sometimes they don't get it right. One player who was 105th in the EA Sport ratings in the rankings this year was Cutter Gauthier.
Yep.
Do you think players then are saying, oh, EA Sports came out and this is my ratings. I'm going to use it in my next year's negotiation. because the word is on the street that Cutter Gauthier with the Anaheim Ducks, and we all know that you know, he's a fantastic player at 41 goals last year in only a second full season in the NHL with the Anaheim Ducks and that young team. Cutter Gauthier has turned down a 4-year $13 million AAV contract with the Anaheim Ducks.
I would too. The way this game is going right now with contracts.
Leo Carlson at the offer sheet, right, at $18 million. Yeah. And so Anaheim only has $9 million or so in cap space right now. So yeah, they could go over the cap this summer. But this is going to be a tricky situation, Dan, where Anaheim's trying to take another step forward this year. Mm-hmm. And Carter Gauthier, a guy that scored 41 goals last year, is in a contract dispute right now. Where do you think that settles in? Because when the season ended, all the projection were like Carter Gauthier is going to get about $10 million. Mm-hmm. And now that you have Connor Bedard, 15, Leo Carlson, 18, Macklin Celebrini, 18 and 0.8, and you're so Carter Gauthier and you turn
Cutter
down.
Carter Gauthier, that's a million more than. Why am I drawing up?
McDavid?
He's gone already, and I'm already Chicago.
It's
offense, and why am I drawing a blank?
Oh, Bo Byram. Byram. Like $12.5 million for Bo Byram.
He's making $500,000 more than Bo Byram.
He's like, no, I need way more than that.
Who I love, and but you know, his camp is sitting there thinking, hang on, this is going. We can go more. So I think players you're going to find are just going to bet on themselves more.
They're going to use the cap and the cap going up as a tool.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. To bet on themselves.
But Anaheim put themselves in that situation. We talked about it. Leo Carlson, they didn't have to open the door for Philly to come with the offer sheet. It went to 18, and now Carter Gauthier has rejected a four-year contract extension.
I personally would take it right now, so if anyone wants to offer.
Yeah, worth $52 million total.
We'll take
so 13 on average.
I'll split it with you.
Well, you know what we can do? We're going to talk to Shayna Goldman about that when she comes up here next on Sabres Live. But first, we got to talk about a great coaches clinic promo that has been offered to all coaches, youth and collegiate hockey. You're going to look at it and you're going to love it. So this coaches clinic is coming up here September the 12th for the coaches clinic here at KeyBank Center. Let me just find my promo so I can read it. Good. Okay, here you go. Sabres are proud to partner with USA Hockey and New York State Amateur Hockey Association to offer an in-person clinic, coaching clinic open to all coaches, youth and collegiate on September the 12th at KeyBank Center. Space is limited, so register now at sabres.com/clinic. I talked to Rob Ray about it. If he's still coaching, he says, no, he's not coaching anymore, so he doesn't have to do the clinic. But that's a great way to learn and get better as coaches here in our area.
Wait a minute. Razor doesn't have to keep learning?
He's always learning.
Okay, good.
We're always learning because we get Shayna Goldman coming up here on Sabres Live after the break here in just a couple of minutes. Stay with us.
Back with more of Sabres Live.